Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Peter Sterling, who is the author of Hearing the Angels Sing, A True Story of Angelic Assistance. Peter is a self-taught harpist who has many CDs out with angelic-inspired harp music. This book is the story of how that came to be. And it's a fascinating book. It is one that I think many listeners will appreciate, especially if they grew up in the 60s and 70s, like I did and other of my friends did. And it explains a lot of what our inner guidance can help us not only find the path that we need to take, but also bring everything that we need to manifest that right into us without any problems, without any other effort needing to be made. And Peter has captured all of this greatly in this book. And we welcome you, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Kolb. It's great to be here.
So, yeah. Would you like to tell the audience a little bit about what you you were guided to do in terms of your music and how your story evolved?
Right. Well, I guess it all unfolded when I was guided to come to Sedona back in the late 80s. And now, at this time, Sedona was just kind of a rumored place. There were stories of this mystical place in the desert southwest of Arizona, and I had heard some tales of this place, so I decided, I was in a transition time, so I decided to make a journey down here from Colorado, where I was living. And from the first, when I drove down Oak Creek Canyon for the first time, I was struck by such a powerful sense of awe from the beauty and the majesty of the Red Rocks, and almost instantly there was a feeling of familiarity to it. It felt mm-hmm. familiar, like someplace I had known before, yet I had no conscious memory of ever being there before. And so my first visit, I had the realization that I was going to live here, and so I mm-hmm. returned to Colorado, packed my stuff, and a few months later I made a move by myself down to Sedona and to start a new life. And right from the very beginning, I've been an avid outdoorsman for most of my life. And so I started to explore the outback here, the remote canyons and the Indian ruins, and really hiked by myself a lot of the time. But what had such a powerful impact on me was this extraordinary silence that exists out in the canyons. And especially back in those days, we had a lot less air traffic and helicopter flights and all that. So it was just very, very silent, and I immersed myself deeply into the silence and just tuning into the energy here. And what happened is I went into a very deep place of stillness and silence. I began to hear music. And at first I thought perhaps the music was coming from maybe somebody was out there with me with a portable stereo playing some classical or symphonic music out there mm-hmm. in the forest in this remote area. But then I realized that, no, I was hearing some sort of music, some inner music. And at first it was very faint, but the more that I just kind of relaxed into it and tuned into it, the louder it became. And then it kind of overwhelmed me. It seemed like everything was in harmony with this music, the sound of the wind and the leaves and the bird song, and there were some trickling streams in the canyons, and everything seemed to be in this glorious harmony with this grand music. And it was very similar to the movie August Rush, if you've seen that movie, where the boy hears mm-hmm. the music and then becomes a great composer. That was very just like what happened to me. And so, to make a long story short, I heard the music, and then, trusting my inner guidance, I received a message to just let go and let the music take me on a journey. And then by doing so, I was also practicing a lot of yoga and meditation. And so I was pretty adept at like soul travel and kind of astral projection, and had it become in tune with my non-local consciousness and was experimenting with that. And so I just let myself go on the sound current, and it just carried me up and out of my body, and I went up into the light and into the golden light, and which many mystics and saints speak about, and many people that have had like near-death experiences. And then I saw the luminous orb of golden light that shined like a thousand suns with this luminous golden light, and it was like emanating pure love. And then I was able to see that it was surrounded by the multitudes of angels, angelic beings of all shapes and sizes, the nine choirs, if you will. And then I linked up with these angels, actually. They came to me. And because at the time when I was in the canyons, I was asking for my mission to be revealed to me. I was searching, deeply searching for who I was, why am I here on earth, and what's my mission.
Right.
And so then the angels came as messengers, like traditionally they're known as. And they revealed to me that my mission in this life was to be a channel for the heavenly music of which I was hearing, and that the instrument I am to play is the harp. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe what I was was hearing. But I was so overwhelmed by this kind of holy presence of the angels and the light and the love that I was feeling and the unity of it all, that I just surrendered to it. And then within a matter of days, a small Celtic harp came to me. And I started to strum it, and I took it out into the canyons, and it had a little carrying case, and I could sling it over my shoulder and walk out into the forest and find a special place to take out my harp and start strumming it. And as I started to do that, I just noticed that, all the animals came around, the birds started to sing with me, the wind picked up, all these elemental forces started to respond to it. It was very magical. And then an energy overcame me. I really didn't take any lessons. I just started strumming it and allowing my hands to do what they wanted to do. And within a short time, distinct melodies started happening. And then after 10 months, I made my first recording, Harp Magic, which ended up getting discovered by a record label through synchronicity and circumstance. And they released my music worldwide to critical acclaim, and then within the year I was nominated for String Album of the Year in the Indie Awards here back in 1994, and this was like known as the Baby Grammys, and so it was very exciting, and many people the world over have reported miraculous healings and all sorts of beautiful experiences listening to the music, and I've been carrying on now for over 20 years, and getting ready to release my 16th CD, and several of them over recent years have gone to number one around the world on the radio charts for New Age music. I've received several nominations in recent years for Album of the Year for New Age music, and all of that. So it's been very exciting, very fulfilling, and very rewarding to bring forth the angels' music over the last 20 years. So thank you for allowing me to share my story with everybody.
Well, that's really incredible. I think many of us who've done deep meditation work have heard the music of the spheres. It's a very incredible music. I'm not a musician, so I have no way to bring it in. But I wanted to share with you, Peter, one thing that happened to me in Sedona. I was actually taken out there to attend the Keys of Enoch meeting. I took 5 months off and did nothing but meditate, fast, and work with a group of clairvoyants in the early 1990s, and I was guided to read the Keys of Enoch. So I went out, and I was actually sitting in the Keys of Enoch meeting when I was told to leave there and go to the airport vortex. And mm-hmm. so I didn't know where it was, so I stopped at a gas station and asked, and they told me where the airport vortex was. So I went over there, and I went into meditation, and I was given the vision of this center that I was to build. And I was told that the center would be for the disasters. And it really is. It's for all of the people that medicine has kind of forgotten, iatrogenic or doctor-induced injuries that the doctors claim have nothing to do with anything that they did, the breast implant illness and everything, plus a lot of other things, cancer, autoimmune disease, things that traditional medicine really doesn't understand. Sure. So I was given that vision, and then I went to a bookstore, and I loved your book talking about the direct communication from the Arcturians, Palladians, and Syrians. I went to a bookstore, and I looked around because I knew I was supposed to read stuff on Ashtar, but I didn't really know where it was. So I walked up to this guy who was in the bookstore. He didn't work there, but he looked extremely Palladian. And I walked up to him, and I said, I need to read about Ashtar. What do I need to read? And so he took me over, and he took out all these books, and about six of them, and he said, here, read these. So I did. I bought those, and I read them, and I've been in communication, such as you have, with the Palladians and the other star people that are running the Ascension, so to speak, or have a great deal to do with the Ascension. So that was where I made my initial contact. And Sedona, then we did a 7-day water fast. My roommate and I did a 7-day water fast in the canyons that you're talking about.
So
we really did some deep spiritual work then.
Well, we have a lot of parallels here. When I was fasting in the canyons too, because I lived in my car here. I had a Volkswagen camper van, and I was guided to give everything up, and I most of my material possession except a few keepsakes, and I acquired a camper van, and I lived in the van, and it ended up for 3 years. I slept almost every night in the canyons here and did a lot of fasting and whatnot. But also you were talking about the Keys of Enoch. That book I got, I discovered that in about 1985. And I read it, and then over the years, I worked with Dr. J.J. Hertek and his wife at their at their workshops, and played my harp for them.
Right.
One year I played for their Easter celebration, and in Joshua Tree, and we had about 400 or 500 people. And he actually asked me to open the whole conference, so I was the first one to be on stage at the very beginning. And I did an angelic invocation on my harp for his group, and then and we've been friends over the years now. And that book had a big influence on me for sure.
Well, that's a really different book. I mean, it stands out as being revelation, true revelation about multidimensional reality. And I remember having to read it and then go into meditation for a few hours to be given the information to understand it. It was really an incredible book. Yeah.
Well, it opens mind. It's a fifth dimensional kind of communication, and it's revelatory in nature. So by reading it, it actually has the effect of making new connections in the brain and the mind to open up to. And it's very activating, and it activates the chakras, the energy centers, and kind of the higher neural circuitry, I believe, so that we can access, fifth dimensional and states of consciousness within the unified field of oneness, Yeah.
So your work is so important because it's actually bringing down. Do you want to explain to the listening audience what music really represents in the fifth dimension? Because I think that's important to understand the musical message that you bring down from the fifth into the third.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it was always revealed to me that, and it was shown to me that within the higher dimensions, the celestial spheres of light, luminous light within the angelic realms, there is this glorious music. So my mission was to be like a transducer and to to be a channel and to transduce and to bring into this dimension of which we live within the third dimension here, this higher frequency angelic celestial music, which has the frequencies, has the heavenly harmonics encoded in it that are like a doorway and can be like a golden thread, if you will, that can, if the listener can open up and to surrender to it, the sound and the frequency can elevate one, can actually create an ascension of consciousness for the soul, and the music gives wings to the soul. So if you listen with your eyes closed, you can go on these kind of flights of fancy up into the spheres of, you know, celestial light. The music is a bridge, it's a doorway, it's a vehicle for the soul or the spirit or that non-local aspect of non-local consciousness within us can travel on it up into these higher planes and then to have a reconnection, if you will, and can help the listener or help the soul to make an ascension up into the realms of light to experience the unity, the blissful, ecstatic unity of oneness there. And once you've experienced that, then you are transformed, you are healed, your consciousness is illuminated, and there's an aspect of enlightenment that occurs and self-realization that occurs within that luminous light. And the music is a vehicle to take people there. And that was revealed to me, you know, from the angels at the very beginning, even before I had made any recordings. And I thought it was a very tall order that I was going to be doing something like that. But now, right from the beginning, once people started to experience the music, that it was confirmed from people all over the world that have written me the most beautiful letters and shared their experience of what happens to them when they do listen to it. So, indeed, that's been my mission. And they say that, you know, as we develop, life is conceived and the fetus develops, the first sense that comes online and is developed is the sense of hearing, and how the fetus and the baby can hear everything in the womb. And then at the moment of death and passing, that hearing is the last sense to leave the body.
Right.
And even some traditions, like the Tibetans, believe that you can stay with the deceased for several days after actually speaking to them and guiding them into the different levels of the bardo. That's by reading the Tibet Book of the Dead. So sound is the key. The connecting with the inner light and the inner sound has been, you know, foundational to so many, you know, spiritual traditions throughout the ages, throughout all cultures. So that is something that I always, you know, has been part of my work, is to help to connect people to the inner light and the inner sound. And it's a beautiful experience.
Yeah, we know in surgery, and in fact it's well known by anesthesia, that sound is the last thing to go and the first thing to come back. So, you know, a lot of times when the patient is moving, we actually say, everything's going fine, you're just waking up, even if we're going to put them back to sleep. Isn't that interesting? So, in fact, we said it yesterday. It was very interesting. You know, the patient, we have something called a BIS monitor, which allows us to know when the patient's coming more conscious. And all of a sudden, the patient's BIS monitor, you know, or BIS went up into consciousness, and she started to move. And so then we know, you know, to get more anesthesia. Anesthesia is to get more anesthesia. So it is very true that sound is important consciousness. It's very interesting.
Yes, and my music has been played in operating rooms on several occasions. And there has been some studies about, especially the harp, for harp therapy in the operating room.
There are some
universities and medical centers that have harpists that play in the operating room. Now, I've played myself in the hospital in the critical care units from patients strolling room to room, and had tremendous experiences the patients and the doctors would follow me around and see that when I started to play that, you know, all the pain would leave their body, and oftentimes people would begin to cry, and because a healing would come upon them. But the studies that were done, they found that when there's a harpist in the operating room and they're playing, that the blood pressure and the respiration go down, you know, and then as soon as they stop playing, even when the person is under anesthesia, then as soon as they stop, and the respiration and heart rate go up. So there's something about the harp, and people often ask, what is it about the harp? You know, and the harp is perhaps the most sacred of all instruments. It's found in many cultures around the world in ancient antiquity. We actually have harps in museums that are over 5,000 years old from ancient Sumeria. And then, you know, ancient Egypt, it was played in the temples of healing and, and during ceremony and whatnot, and also in ancient Greece and Sumeria, and probably even in Atlantis before there, there are legends of the harp. And even in the Greek gods, like Apollo played the harp. And then King David played the harp as well. So in the Old Testament, the Bible, and he would fall into these ecstatic reveries where he would strum the harp and then sing, and that's how he composed the Psalms. So the harp has this illustrious history throughout ancient cultures, and because it is the most pure harmonic of all instruments, there's a tone to the harp that no other instrument has. It's a purity, and it, the overtones that the harp creates act like a, because they align so perfectly, and also the construction of the harp incorporates the golden section or the phi ratio and what they call the harmonic curve, which is the beautiful, sloping, graceful lines of a harp that look like a wing, that those are constructed and curved within the phi ratio that, as, that gives the harp also its unique tonal quality. So, yeah.
Yeah, the House of David was Palladian, and it's well known that Palladians, of which I believe that you come from that line as well, the Palladians loved to play, sing, dance, and you know, just enjoy themselves. And Palladians don't really differentiate work from play. You know, everything's play.
Yes. And, that's always been my problem in this life.
Right. Well, you see, I was very lucky. I was able to go into surgery, which I consider play, and so I can actually earn money playing, as you know, pretty easily. But I wanted to tell you, my father made a harp. He was a master craftsman, and he made a harp. And we were emptying out one of the rooms here because we happened to have a U-Haul truck that we were renting, and we had an extra day on it. And I found his harp, which is a big harp. It's like a full-size harp. And so I put it back in the house, and I'm gonna take it out and play it. So you've inspired me to try the harp.
Yeah, you should get yourself a good tuner and get it all tuned up right.
Right,
and then,
just
allow your fingers to strum it. And,
the last person that played my piano was actually Steve Halprom. He was spending the night at my house, and he was playing my piano, and he noted that it was out of tune, too. So I have to get everything back in tune.
That's important. Steve Halprom is a friend of mine, for sure.
Yeah. Steve has a place in Asheville, and he was going back to California, and he asked to spend the night at my house. And I've interviewed Steve a couple of times on this show. So. Yeah.
Awesome.
So we love musicians. We love musicians on Temple of Health because it's a great way to connect with spirit. It really is.
Definitely. Yeah. So now one of the main things I'm doing now is you know, I live in Sedona, and so people come here and I take them out onto the land. I do backcountry journeys to the sacred sites and the power spots here, and I have a Jeep. And we go to remote locations. I have several locations that I frequent. And then I bring a small harp out onto the land with me and a beautiful alchemy crystal bowl and go to these beautiful vista points and then lay people down on the rocks. And do the wind harp. And the wind harp is interesting because when I play outside and the wind is blowing, the wind blows through the strings and makes them vibrate and creates the most beautiful, beautiful celestial heavenly sound you've ever heard. And it's very, very healing. So I just kind of hold the harp over the person's body and sweep it from side to side as they're bathed in this celestial wind harp sound. And then I also use the crystal bowls, and I bring some crystals and place crystals on the body and do a whole beautiful kind of healing activation out in the Red Rock power spots here. So you'll have to come and experience that sometime.
That sounds great. Do you have a website, any contact information you'd like to share?
Sure. It's www.harpmagic.com. And right there on the home page, you can see all my stuff. And then there's also a picture of Sedona's Red Rocks there, and it says Sacred Sedona Land Journeys. And people can click there to learn more about the backcountry tours I do.
Now, in the book, I guess it's available at lighttechnologies.com, is a list of your music, but it ends in 2010. So I guess this is not complete, right?
That is not complete. I have everything. It's on harpmagic.com. The book's also on Amazon.
Okay.
And iTunes. They have it in Kindle and, digital versions. And you can also get it from my website as well. But I do have I have released more music since 2010. I've had three albums since then. So working on number 16 right now. But all the music, people can come and have a sample, hear it, check it all out at heartmagic.com.
Great. Mm-hmm. So the music of the spheres is actually more than just music. It actually is, you want to explain to the listening audience how it is creative? Because I think that's very important.
How it is created
or
creative?
Yeah, creative for the multidimensional realities. In other words, it's involved in the creation of creation. I mean, it's like, it's not just something nice to listen to. It has a higher purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what the angels told me when I first heard the inner music, the celestial music. They did tell me that they called it the song of creation.
Right.
And that they said that in ancient antiquity that all people, all the beings could hear the glorious music.
Right.
And that it kept everything in a state of celestial harmony. And even the mortals that dwelled upon the earth endeavored to sing and to replicate the glorious heavenly music. And that is even today still, even that there are traditions, religious and spiritual traditions, that endeavor to do that. And one of the most recent examples of that was when the Pope was visiting the United States, and he did a mass at the St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. And it was absolutely glorious. They played this huge pipe organ in this grand, grand, glorious cathedral that was all built with sacred geometry and just replicated and represented the structure of the heavenly worlds and the mansion worlds with this beautiful pipe organ. And it was like there were so many angels vaulted on the ceiling, rising up through eternity. You could see it. It was almost like the roof of the cathedral opened up to the heavens, and it was absolutely glorious heavenly experience. And so that's one example of how music, in religious traditions has strived to represent that glorious heavenly sound. But now there also, with the music of the spheres, there is an element to it where there's the planetary harmonics, because as our planets spin around the sun, they do create a resonant vibration and a tone to them. And even our sun emanates a sound frequency that NASA has been able to record. It's called Sound of the Sun. And you can actually listen to that. If you just Google that, you can hear the sound of the sun. But all the planets have a tone. And so that's more of my orientation to the music of the spheres, is the planetary harmonics. But the celestial music, actually, because the planets exist within the third dimensional physical reality, which we perceive with our physical senses, but the heavenly and the celestial music, which comes from the angelic realms, is actually a higher harmonic than the music of the spheres, and can certainly the music of the spheres can move us into higher states of consciousness. But even to make a full ascension, then we can link with the celestial angelic tones, and that really acts as a vehicle of ascension. And it can actually, a lot of the angels had revealed to me that through using the harp and doing a lot of the work I've done was in order to activate the vehicle of ascension, which is known through the Keys of Enoch as the Merkaba, which is the mm-hmm. sacred geometry, the chariot of light, which is actually encoded in our DNA, and it's a vehicle of ascension. It's an evolutionary vehicle of ascension that is, in most of us, is lying dormant as a blueprint within the DNA. And as we receive the heavenly harmonics and come into resonance with higher frequencies with the intention to awaken and to, you know, stimulate and awaken the dormant DNA, then that heavenly blueprint of the chariot of light, which we are all encoded with, is awakened, and then we can start to perceive it and interact with it and create the strong field of light around us that can carry us into higher levels of consciousness.
There's a lot of information in your book, Hear the Angels Sing, about ascension. I think
yes.
you've gotten, because of your communication with the angels and other multidimensional beings, you've had some sort of appreciation about what ascension is all about. Would you like to share that?
Right. Well, I have been, you know, speaking directly to it as far as the heavenly harmonics and how the sound current can lift us into these higher levels of, it's a higher frequency. It's through, mm-hmm. with the harmonics can act as the harmonics of the sound, especially with the harp, can be like a vehicle to lift us into these higher states of consciousness. So, mm-hmm. you know, what is ascension? This is a big question. So there are some who believe that perhaps we would increase our vibration enough within our bodies, within our DNA and our cellular structure, that we could actually have a liftoff experience, or we could maybe even dematerialize and get off mm-hmm. of the physical planet and have a full transcendent, like a rapture. This is what, you know, in the Christian tradition, they speak of the rapture, where people
right.
will actually be lifted off of the planet and taken up into the heavenly spheres. And so it's possible. Now, some people have the belief that the whole planet is making an ascension, that the whole planet
right.
is increasing its vibration. And apparently, I guess there is some scientific evidence that is showing that the Schumann resonance of the planet, the 7.8 hertz, which has been pretty constant, has been increasing of late mm-hmm. and is increasing on a harmonic kind of progression to higher frequencies of the planet mm-hmm. itself, which is evidence of the whole planet is making an ascension, perhaps. So it's when we start to look at, you know, what ascension looks like, there are even, you know, on a supracosmic level, metaphysically speaking, that we are all living on an evolutionary journey. We're on a timeline through time and space,
mm-hmm.
and it's evolutionary in nature. We're traveling on these timelines, and that perhaps we are having converging timelines now, and that those souls that are choosing to consciously make an ascension to go into higher planes of existence will have an opportunity to do that because of the convergence of timelines and portals, Stargate portals that when the timelines converge at these nexus points, these nodal points or nexus where they come together, there is an opportunity to make a hyper jump into the next level of existence, and and one that is going towards into unity and oneness. So that opportunity is happening now. It's almost happening in slow motion because of the way that our perceptions are, but I think many people are reporting that they are linking with higher frequency energies, which are affecting their perceptions. They're starting to see through the illusion of duality here within the world that our third dimensional world has been, you know, encased in, and now new vistas, new panoramas of oneness, of illuminated vistas of oneness, unity, peace, harmony are, you know, even within the chaos of the world, these beautiful vistas, many of us are choosing to focus there and are aligning our awareness, our consciousness, and making a conscious co-creative decision to go to the next level. And a lot of us are doing that work to release our limiting belief systems, to do our inner healing, to heal our inner child, to reclaim our lost fragments of self, become more into our empowered totality through all the interpersonal spiritual work we're doing and healing work, and becoming more empowered and self-realized as spiritual beings. And by so doing, all of this kind of inner alchemy that we accrue and gather more energy within our being, within our bodies, within our cellular structures, more light, and start to vibrate faster. And as you do that, then we move into a state of conscious, what I call a miracle mindedness. And that's when synchronicities and happenstance, chance happenings and synchronicities start to become more on the increase with greater frequency, and they're showing us something. So I think many people report as they open up to their spiritual consciousness and raise their vibration, synchronicities start to increase. And these are like the little miracles of love and that light our way on our journey of self-realization. So if we can trust, learn to trust the synchronicities that start to happen as we raise our frequency, that there's a natural kind of navigation within the soul that is leading us towards our highest destiny in the light. And if we can trust that and surrender to it, then we can have a glorious life and find our ultimate spiritual fulfillment.
Yeah, that's very true. There's metaphysical information, too, that the Earth is the last planet in our solar system to ascend, that all the other planets have gone through this process, and that's why there's no life, you know, third-dimensional life, at least like there is on Earth, on these planets. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that your grandma, Momo, was... was Ekinkar. And
that's
so
right.
So the beings from Venus actually came here and started Ekinkar, but these were, you know, higher dimensional beings, because Venus, of course, along with the other planets, had already undergone this ascension, and so Earth is kind of the last straggler to make that ascension. I think it's easier to understand it within a broader context like that. I mean, we have evidence that, you know, a lot of the Palladians and Arcturians and Syrians and Venetians are higher dimensional beings. So they obviously don't live in the third dimensional Venus, because it's pretty, it's pretty non-conducive to physical life, you know. But but at a higher dimension, it's populated. I think that makes it easier to understand where we're headed.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Ekinkar. My grandmother, Mama, was really, I feel very blessed that I had a grandmother like that, who was very spiritually attuned and a mystic. And Ekinkar, for those who don't know, is the ancient science of soul travel. And the story is that it was given to some of the masters in the Himalayan masters, by these advanced beings that came from Venus, the Venusians, and given to the Himalayan masters, and then they passed on the teachings or the information to Paul Twitchell, who brought it to the West and wrote numerous books and was the living Eck master for many years. And my grandmother was introduced to Eck and Carr back in the 1960s and became very adept at it. She actually was she became a fifth initiate, which is very advanced in the art of soul travel. And as I was a young boy, she would tell me about her spiritual flights of fancy up into the celestial realms, and she'd tell me about the angels, and she told me she heard this glorious music playing in her head. And
so that was important. That was very important in your path.
Well, she planted a seed for sure. And,
one
of the things she always told me, and she used to whisper in my ear when I was a young boy, even when she would tuck me in at night, she said, listen to your inner voice. Listen to your inner voice. And she just keep repeating that and planting that seed. And ever since I was young, I had a connection to the inner voice, which has guided me, you know, pretty much throughout my whole life. So I feel very lucky that I was able to have that.
Yeah, I went into meditation right before I was guided to quit my job. I mean, I went into meditation and asked what to do, and I heard, quit your job. At the time, I was a very successful plastic surgeon, so I quit my job. And, of course, everybody thought I was crazy, but I did 5 months. Now, I want to tell you something interesting about Eck and Carr. I think you'll find this fascinating. Eck and Carr was part of our education. We met 3 times a week. There were 7 of us. And learning spiritual sight and hearing, learning to channel, learning all the things, learning healing, all of the gifts. I basically quit my job so that I could study with this group of 7 people. And 2 of the people were doing a little exercise on the side, unbeknownst to the rest of us, and they called Rabbi Zartaris to appear. And to their shock, he appeared in the physical. And then he admonished them for bothering him. You know, Rabbi Zartaris is an Eck and Carr master. So he actually appeared in their living room, but admonished them for, or scolded them for calling him, and said that they had no right to do that. So that was part of what happened during 1960s. I'm sorry, 1990s, during the 5 months that I was studying with this group. So I thought that was hilarious, you know.
Well, it's interesting.
You can't just call a master.
Yeah, and, you know, also something I've learned in recent years is that Sedona has had an Eck and Carr community here and had a center here for many, many years you could go into this house and they had all the framed pictures of all the Eck masters in the house. And some of the biggest people in Eck and Carr came to Sedona even back in the 1960s and 70s and anchored, you know, kind of the Eck and Carr energy here in the Red Rock country of Sedona. So I think that Sedona is interesting because it has this energetic to it. And I also recently discovered that the United States Geological Survey has surveyed, you know, all of North America, the magnetic fields, and what they do is they fly in a plane or a helicopter at a certain elevation with a magnetometer, and they can measure the Earth's magnetic field. Well, what they found here in Sedona has the highest occurrence of magnetic anomalies in the magnetic field here in North America.
Wow.
Meaning that there's drops and spikes in the magnetic field here. And there is some research on how that affects brainwave states, the magnetic field, because our brain interacts with the magnetic field. So when you come and you sit on these certain power spots where there's been known phenomena and the magnetic fields, there's these anomalies that it can really create a shift in perceptions and levels of awareness here. So, anyway,
that's where I was given the airport vortex, which I'm sure you've been to, is where I was given that vision of building this center for, you know, that has helped thousands of people. And without it, thousands of people probably would have gone ahead and died, you know, because there'd be no hope for them. So, you know, You're right. Beautiful. I was guided there because, and I was actually told to leave Hertog's lecture and go to the airport vortex. It was really funny.
Oh, wow. Well, you were listening to your inner voice.
I was.
You were obviously being guided. Yeah. And that's the magic of Sedona. Many people come here and then they receive the visions for what they're supposed to do with their life. That certainly happened to me. It sounds like it happened to you, too. And also for many, many of my friends have had that experience here.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just wonderful that you're doing these activations and healings for people out in the, you're real familiar with all of the PowerPoints and mm-hmm. you can really help facilitate that. So I would encourage anybody who is really struggling with, because some still are, mm-hmm. still struggling with their mission. You know, they know in their heart that they aren't doing it, but they're not sure what it is. I think if they would travel out and visit you in your with all the tools that you have, that you could really help them.
Well, certainly that's what we do, and my wife is here as well, and she does. She's a certified massage therapist and energy worker, and so we work as mm-hmm. a team. And then our house is like a center here because I also am an artist. I'm a visual artist, so I do my stained glass and my paintings here. And the mm-hmm. house is like it's a working artist studio and a gallery showroom in the upper floor in the main area. So we bring our clients and people into the home. And then we often mm-hmm. do house concerts and workshops here and special events as well. So invite everybody to come and have a visit with us.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. Well, people can come to my website at harpmagic.com. And if you're on Facebook, you can like my pages there on Facebook. I have Peter Sterling Music. Mm-hmm. Harp Magic Music is on Facebook. Also, my art is called Mandala Magic because I make these beautiful mandalas. And so you can find that on Facebook as well and take a look at my art. Also, if you want to email me, you can write me at peter@harpmagic.com. for inquiries. But you can learn more about my art, music, and also my tours at harpmagic.com.
I think it's fascinating how you got into stained glass because you made the connection, I guess, one of the first times you saw stained glass being used in the church, that it really mm-hmm. was helpful to connect to the higher realms.
Well, certainly it was. I mean, the stained glass has been put into it's something I've been doing. As you read in my book, I had a vision at 6 years old when my mother took me in around Easter time to the Episcopal Church in Los Angeles for the first time, mm-hmm. rather than going to Sunday school with the kids. She wanted me to come in and see the service, and I was transfixed by what I was seeing with the, you know, burning of incense and holy water and the beautiful stained glass windows and the beautiful music mm-hmm. and all of that. And I was actually... the light started coming in through the stained glass window, and I was transported out. And actually, that was my first encounter, I think, with the angels. I went up into the light. I was 6 years mm-hmm. old. And when I came back into my body, I told my mother, sitting in the pew, I said, when I grow up, I want to be a stained glass window maker. And that finally did happen. When I was 16, I became an apprentice with a master glass craftsman who taught me the art. And I've been doing it ever since. And I have stained glass windows hanging all through my house and whatnot. People mm-hmm. come and see that. But the stained glass was always used as believed to be like a portal up into the heavenly, up into the heavenly realms. And the light streaming in was like the hand of the Holy Spirit coming into the sanctuary. And that's what I've endeavored to do that with my work, for sure.
Yeah, you had to have past lives doing that, too. In cathedrals, you know, you had to.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were very adept at it when you tried it.
Yeah, all of my work I'm doing now with my art, and my music and everything, I've mm-hmm. done it before. It's just that this is nothing new for me. I've been doing it probably through many incarnations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been a surgeon in many, many lifetimes. And, you know, plastic surgery is probably the ultimate art in medicine. You know, we mm-hmm. have to, someone will be in a car wreck and their face will be a bloody mess, everything crushed in, and you ask for a photograph, and then you take them into surgery and try to make them look like that. You know, yeah. it's well, bless sculpting you for doing flesh.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, it was I was guided directly into plastic surgery by a voice, an inner voice that said, "You're going to be a plastic surgeon." And it was at midnight supper when I was a third-year medical school student, and I looked over at Barry, who I was eating midnight supper with, and I said, "Barry, I'm going to be a plastic surgeon." He says, "Well, you don't know anything about plastic surgery," because we hadn't taken it yet. It was kind of funny. But, you know, you're right. You just follow that guidance, and you end up where you're supposed to be.
That's true. And now the most recent development is working with the alchemy of gold, as we know. And I'm working with gold on all levels because I do believe that gold plays a key to the golden age. And we have this gold connection between all of us. And I'm eating gold. I'm helping people connect with gold to help raise their vibration and bring them into more prosperity and abundance and to new levels of that. So it's the recent.
You want to hear something really wild, though?
Sure.
I just started taking monatomic gold, too, through an inner guidance. And
right.
I'm involved with carrot bars, you know, through Lorraine.
Yeah.
Lorraine was just down here this week doing the gold stuff with carrot bars. And so we are all being guided at the same time in the same direction. It's really odd. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of odd, but not really. It feels like...
Not really,
You know, the promise of the golden age is prosperity and abundance for all.
Right.
And, you know, gold holds the ascension frequencies in a physical form. It's the most powerful alchemical substance unknown to man on Earth is gold. And so, you know, the carrot bars gold has come to us you know, realize new levels of prosperity and abundance and help others to achieve that and to get gold in the hands of people all over the world so they can actually have the physical gold because, you know, the elites and the most powerful people have held the gold. But now, through the carrot bars vision, it's bringing gold to the masses of common people around the world so that they, too, can hold the gold frequencies. And so this is very, very important, and I encourage our listeners to... you know, have a look at your link. Maybe you could post a link for them to get some more information. But I'm moving forward with this very, very strongly right now.
Right,
and helping others to do this. I feel it's a very important piece of the puzzle for us right now. You know, so many of our friends in the spiritual realm that I know who are light workers, beautiful souls, they're all struggling financially. So many people are struggling to make ends meet. And the vision of Carrot Bars is to empower us to have, you know, new levels of prosperity and abundance. And I feel that's so important for us. So I encourage your listeners to check it out for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to tell the listeners that in the November newsletter, we'll have a short, probably half a page or one page thing on carrot bars, but there'll be links to videos that you can watch about what Peter is talking about because... You know, you don't really realize, having grown up in a world that only knew dollars and, you know, currencies, at how the currencies are being eroded. And there's videos that show why it is important to actually have gold rather than to just put your currency in the bank and hope that, you know, your currency won't erode, because historically it really does erode. So, especially if you're younger, I mean, if you're my age, you know, you're close to retirement anyway, but the younger people, if you realize how much that money will erode and that investments right now are not keeping up with that degree of erosion, you know, so you can't say, oh, well, I'll invest it and then that'll counteract that, because it may not. And I think that, but we'll have all that posted in the November newsletter. And if you want to contact info@plasticos.com, we can send you that newsletter electronically. So, and I'm sure Peter has. You have information about the thing on your website too, I would imagine.
I haven't put carrot bars up on my website yet, and I should. I just haven't gotten
around
to
it.
It's all it's relatively new for me, you know.
It is.
So,
yeah.
But I'm having tremendous success with it, and I'm very excited about this and love working
with the gold energy,
right,
and sharing it with people right now. And there are big changes sweeping the planet as far as, you know, economically speaking, that all countries are acquiring as much gold as they can. We seem to be going back to the gold standard.
Yeah.
And so and these are the final days of the, you know, the dominance of the dollar and all of that. So it's important for all of us to start acquiring
also,
a little gold savings.
Yeah, and also the really important news is the information that Keshe is putting out on, you know, the ending the dominance of oil and other, you know, more, I guess, expensive energy sources that really have kept the planet, most of the people on the planet, in slavery. Because energy is so expensive. So
we're all excited to see his plasma generator demonstrated. And I've been on the website. It's very exciting developments with that. I can't wait to get one myself from my home here in Sedona.
Right. Mm-hmm. We're truly in the last stages of the ending of the dense third dimensional arena, and I think we're all just going to be a lot freer and a lot more prosperous, and a lot life is going to be a lot easier, which is it's time for that.
We are standing on the threshold of a golden age, and you know, even the recent reports from NASA that they've discovered an artificial structure potentially that's out in space around a star. I don't know if you caught that story, but it's a huge sphere-like, planet-sized artificial structure, they believe. And Michio Kaku, the Nobel Prize laureate, he was saying that the discovery of this is as potentially as big as Columbus discovering America, is what he said.
Really exciting.
Because if this is actually an alien structure in space, and we found one, this is
we were told that the Arcturians have ships that are 10,000 miles in length. I mean, you know, we know that there are just incredible things out there. That, and I really believe where disclosure is right around the. I think it's all going to happen at once. Disclosure, the energy, you know, freedom, the financial freedom, which is tied to the energy freedom, and health. I'm medical, so I really am interested. In fact, I was asked to go to the Inner Planes, and a Arcturian, Syrian, and Palladian asked me to be part of the medical disclosure. So I said yes, of course I would be. So that's around the corner as well.
Awesome.
But thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your taking the time, and I'm glad Lorraine connected us.
Yes.
That was great. So anyway, we've been interviewing Peter Sterling, who is the author of Hearing the Angels Sing. And if you go to HeartMagic, is it .com, Peter?
Yes, or HeartMagic, HeartMagic.com.
You can see all of his music listed there. And please also note that he does activation sessions in Sedona for those of you who are guided to take advantage of that. Let's see, next week we have Beyond MTHFR by Andrew Rostenberg. I'm looking forward to that because a lot of my silicone toxic patients have methylation defects and other detoxification defects. And then Megan Carnicus is the next week, a deeper perspective on Alzheimer's and other dementias. So thanks, Peter, for joining us. We really appreciate your input today. It was a great interview.
You're welcome, Doctor, and I look forward to meeting up in person sometime. Hopefully.
Great. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, this
is
Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.